Welcome to the Ninja Lane Podcast. In this episode, we take a look at CES from an editor point of view and look deeper into some of the articles that were posted. We invite you to follow along on the website and hope you enjoy.
I know, Dennis, you just got back from CES, and traditionally we do a luncheon and kind of debrief, and I get to hear all the fun stories and all the details that maybe you didn't get a chance to put on the web. And it got me thinking it might be fun to share some of that discussion as part of the podcast.
Oh, cool. So where do we want to start?
Well, I think, you know, in an effort to go beyond what you normally post on the Ninja Lane forums and the news postings, it might be fun to start with just kind of an introduction to CES. I know you go to CES every year, and we've talked a little bit about your preparation that goes into it from a logistical standpoint in the past. But from a more of a thematic standpoint, you know, every year is different, and you kind of feel different themes and trends. Were there any things in particular you were looking forward to or that you had hoped had happened before we dig into the details?
I was hoping to see some, like, next-generation Intel stuff. You know, traditionally, Intel likes to release new processors and chipsets around CES. You know, a couple CESs ago, it was Sandy Bridge. And,
right.
And then we had X79 shortly thereafter and stuff like that. So I was hoping to see some of the next generation. We're kind of in between product launches, and Intel was making everyone be really tight-lipped about that. So
right.
It was all, a lot of the stuff that was on display was stuff that I saw at Computex. And truth be told, I am not there for CES specifically.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be that I would go to CES, you know, living in Idaho, it's too close not to go to CES, if that makes any sense.
Well, yeah, as opposed to going to Taiwan, for example.
Well, yeah, that's kind of a track right there. But yeah, I'm always reminded of the first trade show I ever attended, which was Comdex. I think you remember Comdex. It was
right.
a trade show and then also an educational hour where they would teach you how to program and stuff like that, which was pretty cool. I wasn't prepared. I figured, hey, I'll just go walk around the trade show. I figured it was in like one area, which it wasn't. And, you know, I could just kind of check out the different exhibits and talk to some people, make some contacts. It was me trying to be, you know, a good networker. Turned out to be a total failure because I didn't plan ahead. At CES, I always try to plan. I will make contacts with my current manufacturer, say, hey, I would like to set up a meeting. And then we figure out a time, and then I can figure out logistically, I need to be in this area, this hotel on this day, you know, before lunch, who else is in that area, and try to schedule them to make sure that I'm not going across the strip to go and visit people. Now, that might not make too much sense because CES is actually at the Las Vegas Convention Center.
Right.
But my manufacturers aren't necessarily part of CES. They're taking advantage of the media attention of CES, but they go and rent a hotel suite somewhere and say, hey, come on by and check us out.
That gives them a little more control over the audience.
That's really the primary driver. One of them is cost. You know, it costs a lot to be on the show floor. But the other part is that in a hotel suite, you can sit down and actually talk to people. And if you're there for your meeting, you set aside an hour and you have their full-on attention for that hour.
Well, I know that we talked a little bit in preparation of CES also about some of the big names that didn't come. And Microsoft, I think, was the main example.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned that this is kind of...
It's kind of the beginning of the end, and that was the feeling that I got, not necessarily from CES in general. The companies that are going there, they don't see much of a benefit of the show except to network. It's not a trade show for sales. It's not a trade show for consuming new tech. It's more of a trade show of showing off.
Okay.
So LG, for instance, they have a huge area, and it's all filled with TVs, refrigerators, vacuum cleaners, you know, everything that LG does.
I think people forget how big LG is.
Yeah.
Like Samsung.
Well, and Samsung had the biggest television there, which was 110 inches.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. It's not one that you're going to buy. They didn't even give you a price tag because it's not for sale.
Oh, wow.
But it was there just to show off. And it was a full 3D television, which was pretty cool.
Isn't that like super OLED or something too? 4K or one of these new emerging technologies?
Well, and here's the thing. It's like 4K televisions... It's a show-off. It's like, hey, check out my belt buckle or how tall my truck is or something like
that. Sure.
You're not going to be able to put a 4K Ultra, I have to call it Ultra HD because I think that's the marketing term that everyone's coining. You're not going to get a 4K resolution movie on a Blu-ray disc. It's not going to fit. especially with the current audio quality that's on a Blu-ray disc.
Right.
That's one of the reasons that you go with Blu-rays, to get the better audio quality and full 1080p.
Absolutely.
Now, those movies fill most of that disc.
Right.
Well, a 4K, it's going to be four times that, and that's not going to fit on a Blu-ray. You know, you might get half the movie on one and half the movie on another. You're going to have to wait till the next distribution technology comes out. Maybe that's over the wire. I'm already complaining that there's too many Netflixers on my hub here. Right. You know, because like at 6 o'clock, sometimes it gets dog slow because everybody's downloading, and you know, there's just a lot of people on the network.
Well, TVs definitely the theme I'm seeing it. And having not gone to CES, I follow it vicariously through the news postings that you place and also common media. And TVs really seem like a lot of what everyone was talking about.
Yeah, well, they're easy to talk about. And, you know, it's something that it shows off very easily. You know, nobody's, well, let's see, what was it, 2 years ago, or maybe it was last year, LG won a CES award for their washer and dryer combo.
Nice.
And I got a picture of that. So I'm like, hey, this is actually pretty darn cool. But nobody really cares about that because it's not really high tech. It's really hard to talk about. Mm-hmm. Televisions, everyone can relate to a television.
That looks good in advertising.
Yeah. You know, and I read a story. I didn't see this myself, but I read a story that one of the displays at CES was a fork that counted how fast you were eating.
Oh, I saw that.
And I'm like, you know, what's the point for something like that? You know, what's the point of having a robot that dances to the Gangnam Style? What's the point of that?
But well, you know, it's all about
it's entertainment
and the press too. I mean, why bring a big celebrity down to stare at your TV or talk about your robot? You know, it gets you page hits, right?
And yeah, it does. That's one reason that I stopped attending the show for the show. You know, a couple of years ago, I would go to CES to walk around CES, and then I would fit in manufacturer meetings.
Right.
Some of those manufacturers were on the show floor, so it made it pretty easy for me to go and spend a day in South Hall going up and down and then go get lunch and come back and do some more walking. But now, a lot of those manufacturers are in hotel suites, and those are the people I really want to see. And a lot of the stuff on the show floor, I'm not vested in. There's no section on the Ninja Lane site for television.
Right.
You know, there's no on there for, like, robots. Which, you know, those are all entertainment things, and that's one reason I go, but it's not what I cover and not what I try to cover, so there's not much of a reason to go.
Well, with that in mind, let's talk about some of the stuff you did go to see. I thought maybe we could kind of roll through some of the coverage you've placed out on NinjaLane.com to give the folks at home a chance to look at the pictures and some of the things that we're discussing, and just talk us through some of the stuff that you saw and some of the stuff that we can see on the NinjaLane.com website.
Well, the first day, actually, the day before CES, and since my manufacturer friends aren't part of CES, they can start whenever the heck they want.
Sure.
So on Monday, I went and visited with Thermaltake. They're a good supporter of the site, and they had some pretty cool stuff on display. One of them was, let's see, how best to describe this. Tower-style heatsinks have one fatal flaw, and that they're designed for low-profile memory, right. You know, standard profile memory. You get a higher profile memory like the G-Skill Trident X's or the Corsair Dominators. Mm-hmm. Those are a lot taller. Well, the standard tower heatsinks don't fit. You have to orient them in just the right way to make sure that the memory will still clear and you can run your fans. Thermaltake was showing some heatsinks that were designed specifically for this taller memory. They weren't 6 heat pipe configurations, so they're rather thin. That's how they could get away with it.
Okay.
So they really resembled the Hyper 212, which is a really popular heatsink from Cooler Master.
Yeah, I used that for a while.
But they come in different configurations, some with 3 heat pipes, some with 4, some with 5, dual fan, single fan. But the idea is that they will fit in the no-build area around any motherboard that has memory next to the CPU socket. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is cool. And clever.
Yeah, and clever, and it's something that a lot of people needed. Let's see, they were also showing off the Water 3.0, which is an upgrade to Water 2.0. Very minor update.
And at least it shows they're still innovating and trying to improve that product, which is nice.
Yeah. Now, one thing that I think you would like to see is input devices.
Oh, yeah.
And they had their normal mechanical keyboards on display, and they also had a couple of new mice lines.
Yeah, I like the new mice that I'm seeing out there. And I have just recently started working with the Level 10M mouse at home, which I've been enjoying and trying to get used to. It's a great mouse.
Well, they are taking the guts of the Level 10M and kind of pushing it into lesser lines.
That makes sense.
So this one is a gaming mouse. It doesn't really have a name, but the picture on the site, the side of it looks a lot like an Xbox controller. It has the same color buttons, right and left. Well, four color buttons toward the front of your thumb, and then two buttons toward the back of your thumb, and then the standard scroll wheel and stuff like that. The thing I like about this mouse is the perfect size for the American hand.
Well, and what I like about it, too, is a lot of us have grown up with these consoles, so we're used to the feel of that type of button configuration from the consoles. So having that at your thumb on the side of the mouse, to me, is a natural progression, sort of a convergence of the two. And so I'm really looking forward to getting a chance to play with that.
Another company that was in the same hotel was Be Quiet. I first met with them at Computex, and they are now setting up an American shop so they can sell the German cooling gear and power supplies here in the U.S. And they have four products, I believe, on their docket that they're going to be selling. Mm-hmm. An entire line of power supplies from 550 watts up to 1200 watts.
Oh, okay.
Which are pretty nice. And they are selectable between multi and single rail, so overclockers will like them.
Oh, yeah.
But they also have their line of fans with the Silent Wings technology.
Now, I'm a big fan. I should point that out. That's a pun, right?
Yeah.
So I've got to ask, because I love their fans and they're very quiet, but do they use that same fan in the power supplies and the other products? Because that would definitely help control the noise.
Yes, they do. That's one nice thing about this company is that they build everything themselves. I suspect that the power supplies are outsourced, but they design them and they specify, okay, it has to be this way with this fan, this configuration, here's the plugs and stuff like that. Same with the tower heatsink coolers. They're going to have two coolers. One's the dark tower, which there's a review on the site for that. And then there's a low profile version of that. It's just it's a four heat pipe configuration that's horizontal instead of vertical.
Okay, yeah, and we've seen that design in the past, and it really helps out for some of the smaller cases.
Yeah, it's really popular. Now, the biggest concern for Be Quiet is that the American mentality for cooling is not necessarily for noise control.
Well, some of that, too, is we get spoiled in America because we have our computers often in dedicated rooms, and in Europe, that's not as common.
Yeah, that's true. Since the Americans like performance, the Be Quiet folks are a little concerned that their products will not sell well because the focus is on quietness and not necessarily performance. Mm-hmm. Now, as I saw with the dark tower that I reviewed, the heatsink is designed in such a way that it is really a passive design. We just have a fan on it to kind of get things moving. Mm-hmm. If I put a more powerful fan on there, it didn't cool any better. So there was a lot of technology into that heatsink to make sure that it worked well and just barely needed a fan to run. And having a silent design that doesn't necessarily move a lot of air worked really well for them.
I'm seeing a lot of folks moving to more dedicated home theater PCs and media boxes in the living room or places where noise is more important. So I think that you're going to see that market really grow.
Yeah. Now, the last official meeting that I had on day one, the day before the show, was with MSI. MSI is kind of hit or miss when it comes to what they show at trade shows. And I'm sure they know this, but since we're in between product releases, they didn't have anything that they could show.
Anything new, at least.
At least anything new, yeah. They had all their old boards on display. They mentioned that they're working on a couple of refresh boards because the LGA 2011, the Ivy Bridge version, is coming out. So there's going to be a new set of motherboards to go along with the processor release. That's kind of standard. The thing that I found to be most interesting was that they won a CES award for the GTX 680 Lightning.
Oh, and we like the Lightning series.
We do like the Lightning series. But here's the thing. The GTX 680 Lightning was one of the first cards to get neutered by NVIDIA for the overclocking capability. One of the powers of MSI is that they always have that dual BIOS. Mm-hmm. And the one BIOS is set for overclocking. And the other one is set for just regular running on, you know, in your gaming rig.
Right.
They had to remove that secondary BIOS. And at that point, they're seeing it that they don't need to make the Lightning cards anymore because there's no reason to make the Lightning cards anymore. I tend to disagree with them because there's still a market for that enthusiast level gear
that you want to have.
they see it as there's a lot of extra expense to go into this card, and if they can't release it the way that they want, there's not a reason to actually spend all that extra effort.
Okay, I see their point.
But the thing that I thought was really funny is that from an overclocker standpoint, this GTX 680 Lightning is end of life. From an MSI standpoint, they're still making them, but they're not making as many. And I'm going to guess that they're probably pulled off the line, and what's out there is out there.
Oh, well, time to pick one up if you've waited then.
Yeah, but on top of that, they submitted this card to get a CES award, and they won it because of all the innovation and all the extra innovation that went into the card. Does that really make sense? Is that like a good thing for them? Probably not, but it brings a little bit of precedent.
Well, and it kind of shows the stagnation of that market right now in general for video cards. There hasn't been a lot of innovation. And again, we're in between products where we're aware there are new chipsets coming. We've seen the leaked roadmaps and whatnot. But we're still kind of in that same generation that we were in last year.
Yeah, and admittedly, the PC market is pretty flat. I mean, there's not... You know, one thing that we're probably going to discuss later is that companies are adding things to their portfolio, like mobile, for instance.
Oh, yeah. Diversification.
There's a lot of growth in the mobile market, and that's really where you can make your quick buck. Whereas the PC market, it's going to be stable. They're going to sell this amount, and they can guarantee that they're going to make that amount of money. It's not going to get them rich, but it's going to make sure that they don't fold so they can do these other things.
Well, let's talk about day two.
Day two. Day two was the first day of CES, the day that I walked around the CES show floor, because I purposely don't set any manufacturing meetings on the first day.
That gives you a chance to get the feel, right?
Well, I get the feel, and also it's something that I started doing at Computex, because the first day was always press meetings and you have keynote speeches and stuff like that. Same thing at CES. I always wanted the opportunity to attend those. Sometimes NVIDIA would have a keynote speech right after Bill Gates did his keynote.
Right.
Nowadays, that you know, since Bill's not there anymore, they didn't really have that. And in fact, NVIDIA did very little this year, which was kind of weird. Well, they had a press conference the day before, but it was like right when people were sleeping. It was pretty
weird. Oh, no. Not much new to say, I guess.
Well, they had, that's the thing. They had a lot new to say, but they didn't leak it to anybody to give them the impression that they needed to go.
So
Project Shield and some of the new Tegra 4 stuff would have been nice to know about, but it's NVIDIA doing their mobile thing and trying to get into cloud gaming. It's actually kind of fun.
Something to look forward to in the future then.
Yeah. You know, first day, I give it my free day so that I can do different things. And I went and saw the show floor. So that's when I saw the TVs, the LG stuff. Stopped by Sennheiser. They are doing a full 5.1 surround sound gaming headset with a boom mic and noise canceling and, I don't know, just about everything Sennheiser does.
Yeah, you know, I'm a huge fan. In my non-gaming space, those are the only brand of headphones that I'll buy. I love their studio monitors. I'm a huge fan of their travel noise canceling headphones. And they are not cheap, but I find they're one of the few manufacturers that I can count on consistent quality without them trying to pull a Bose on me.
Well, in this case, these gaming headphones, they're really comfy. And I'm going to guess that, you know, after 4 days of the show, they kind of probably got stretched out, so they didn't fit very well. The ear cups fit, they're quite large. And so you know that there's larger drivers in there. Right. It gives you a little bit better imaging because it more airspace around your head. They sounded amazing. And that's on a noisy show floor.
Yeah, and that's what I look forward to them for. So it's nice to see them getting into the gaming space finally.
One of the other meetings I had was with Acetor, which is an Asus company.
Oh, I see. Asus Store.
But the S is kind of doubled up, yeah.
Oh, I gotcha.
It's clever. Brand name aside, the products that they have, they're NAS media boxes. You remember QNAP, they have the awesome NAS, which is really an application appliance.
Yeah.
So you could run PHP, BB, you could run, you know, PHP stuff through Apache. You could also have MySQL databases. You could torrent stuff down.
Yeah, I had really great remote administration too.
Right. Now, Acetor is actually headed up by one of the guys that founded QNAP, which is actually pretty cool. So they brought over pretty much all, not necessarily all the IP, but all of his knowledge of building a NAS box, putting it into this box, and then added some other stuff on top of it. So it's a full application machine. You can download apps from their store that are designed for the Linux distribution that runs on this thing.
Okay.
It has an HDMI out on the NAS.
Oh, so it could double as a home theater box?
It can.
Nice.
And so this is more of a Asian thing, by the way. So say you want to watch the latest television show.
Mm-hmm.
It may not be out in Taiwan, so they go and torrent it down. So while they're at the office, they remote into their NAS box and torrent down the latest version of whatever show they want to watch. When they get home, it's done and they can watch it. They can do that all from just one device, which is actually pretty cool.
Yeah, and it looks slick too. Small.
Yeah, this is the picture that I have is of a two-drive unit, which is kind of the home theater media box.
Now, am I seeing that those are hot swappable?
They are hot swappable.
Very nice.
Fully hot swappable. You can also replace one drive. It'll re-image. You can increase your RAID array, your RAID size, just by swapping out the drives.
Very nice.
So standard server stuff, standard NAS stuff. They also have an application where you can record wireless IP cameras in live feeds.
Oh, so it could also be a security system.
Yeah. So there's a lot of possibilities for this box, and it's really just a little computer that without, you know, keyboard, mouse, monitor, hookup, it does everything. One of the other pictures on here is the rack-mounted version, which is a 9-drive box.
But the same idea.
It's actually the exact same box.
Oh.
I mean, the hardware's slightly different just because it's a 9-drive system.
Sure. But
it's running the same processor. It has an HDMI port on it. And this goes in a data center on a rack, so it's like it still has an HDMI port, which is pretty darn impressive that they can keep the cost down and still put that on there.
No, it keeps it consistent across the platform, too.
Right, and it runs the same OS, different firmware for the different versions, of course, to support different drives.
Of course.
But the box is just bigger to fit in a rack. So it's a 2U design with 9 drives.
Very cool.
Yeah, so chances are we'll be getting one of those into review, so I'm kind of really looking forward to it.
Yeah, that is neat.
One of the last meetings was with Intermax, which is an old company. Back in the early days, they were kind of the go-to company for like fans and power supplies and stuff like that.
Yeah, they do make good power supplies.
And then they kind of had a falling out. I'm not sure exactly what happened within the company, but they kind of stopped selling and they weren't in the public eye anymore. But they're making a big comeback. One of the highlight items was and there's a picture on the site. It's a fan with the vertical fins like on the Silverstone fans.
Nice.
So you don't have conal air coming out of the back of your fan. It's actually a column instead of a cone, which is quite nice. I asked my Silverstone guy about that, and he said, well, we couldn't patent it.
Right.
So they can kind of do whatever they want. Ironically, it's the same fin configuration, the same amount of fins, so they basically just copy directly.
Well, I guess competition is good for us. Keeps the prices down, right?
Yeah. Now, the fans that they're using, some of them have standard bearings, but their flagship fans are full LEDs. They have like 100 LEDs around the outer ring, and they run on the magnet bearings.
And that's what I'm really very excited about, because to me, this is new. I haven't seen this before.
Well, you have, but you probably just didn't recognize it.
Well, that's true.
The
not with the LEDs, though.
No, not with the LEDs. The fan that, I reviewed, it's the Excalibur from Cooler Master.
Right.
It's a high-pressure case fan that had a magnet bearing. You could pop the fan blades out and clean them if you wanted. It was pretty cool.
Very cool.
So this is basically running the same bearing, clear blades with a piece of reflective film at the tail end of one of the fins to kind of give it the reflection off of the LED lights. I should also mention they're PWM fans, which is something that you don't see in an LED fan, mm-hmm. but they have a 3-position switch to limit the high speed of that PWM. So you can have it limit at 600 RPM, I think it's 1200 RPM, and then 1500 RPM. So if you want a high speed fan hooked up to your PWM controller, flip it in the high position and it will be able to spin up that high, but then spin down if it doesn't need to be.
Yeah, and that is very cool. You know, I wish all fans would go to the PWM control.
Yeah, but PWM costs quite a bit more, and if they're looking for a cheap fan, they don't do it,
that's
which
true.
Is pretty crazy.
Well, that's why we have fan controllers still, right?
Yeah. So day 3 was a little bit different. This is when I met with a lot of my manufacturer friends, one of the first companies was Gigabyte, who was plagued with the same problem that MSI had, where they couldn't show any of the new stuff. They can kind of talk about it and talk about the different product lines and how they're going to release products, but they couldn't show anything. Right. Couldn't even say the name. The big thing they had on display, which I don't have a picture of, is a 4K display. Now, it's not a 4K television, but it's a... You may remember from Computex, the Thunderbolt boards that they're releasing were coming out with dual Thunderbolt connections.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Now, at the time, people thought that was a little silly because Thunderbolt is daisy chainable, and the only stuff out was, like, storage. Well, it is a DisplayPort connection over PCI Express. So, in theory, you should be able to run a video feed off of that.
Okay, yeah.
So, what Intel is doing is they are offering a 4K display by taking four 1080p monitors and putting them in a grid configuration and linking them all together into one large display.
That sounds cool. Does that keep the cost down, I would think?
For the monitors, yes. It's I see it as being just a big version of a 30-inch monitor.
Yeah, kind of an iFinity sort of thing.
Yeah, it's not really designed for gaming, though. It's using the built-in graphics, so it's not going to be, you know, you're not going to be setting any 3D world records with it. Oh, but it works pretty good for the office, and they were saying, oh, yeah, well, you know, people that are doing, like, stock market stuff can, you know, have multiple displays. It's like, well, you can do that anyway.
Well, yeah.
But you have to have a discrete graphics card, and in this case, you're using the dual Thunderbolt connections already on the board. Uh-huh. So keeps the cost down, keeps it simple. You know, the display that they had, it looked a little weird because it was just the motherboard, memory, heatsink, and that was it. No discrete.
Four big monitors.
Yeah, four big monitors. No discrete card, nothing. It was pretty cool. The other thing they were showing was a joint venture with Gigabyte and Intel to standardize the all-in-one PC from a hardware standpoint. So the idea is that you'd be able to go to Newegg and buy a bare-bones all-in-one chassis, and then be able to buy all-in-one compatible mini ITX motherboards to drop them in there and put in your SSDs, bolt up the system, and have an all-in-one PC.
Well, generally, I'm a fan of industry standardization, but that's kind of an interesting arena for them to try to standardize.
Well, yeah, and it's, you know, I'm a little torn because the trend is to do kind of like tabletized PCs, not really necessarily all-in-one PCs. HP, I want to say, probably has the best implementation of an all-in-one PC, and it's their workstation edition computer. It folds up, so you can actually from the center, you can unbolt it. One side of it would be the monitor, and the other side of it would be all the hardware. And then you could work on it, fold it back up, and then it doesn't look like it comes apart at all. But it's easily accessible, and you can change heat sinks and stuff like that.
Right.
That's basically the same thing, but except that Intel is trying to standardize it to be more like a DIY computer. You know, so you buy a chassis like a Level 10M, put in your ATX motherboard, and then your three graphics cards, and there's your PC. Well, this is an all-in-one version of something like that.
I can see why you're torn on that, but maybe we're not the target audience.
I'm pretty sure we're not. I wandered in and met with Antec, who is still in the game. They aren't doing a whole slew of cases like they used to. They still have a few power supplies, but nothing really special. They have some new fans that are a lot like the Intermax fans. One of the cool things that they had was a couple of new cases that are builder-friendly, so they have a lot of room behind the motherboard tray. And military colors, they're in gray, you know, gray and green. Full USB 3 support, which is really not that hard anymore.
Well, I thought they were doing dual USB 3 now. Are we seeing that in these cases?
Well, there's each one of them has like four USB ports. Oh. Two of them are USB 3, two of them are USB 2.
Oh, okay, so pretty standard.
They're backwards compatible, so I'm not sure why they don't just do four and then just call it good, but hey, whatever. One of the cool things is the new, you know, and I'm struggling with the name right now, but it's one of the Antec cases that has a full door. That door normally only opens like halfway, and then it's only on one side. Well, their new version of that case has a door that will open fully and then actually touch the side of the case, so it's not in the way anymore.
Oh, like the double hinges. I've seen those on some cases, and that's always a feature I like.
Yeah, and you also get the ability to put it on the other side so you can flip them around, which is pretty cool. All of these meetings were in the Venetian Hotel, which is next to the Sands Expo Center, which is where CES used to be.
Okay.
But the Venetian was typically the spot where if you needed to have a CES-approved hotel suite, you could rent one of the rooms.
Ah.
Still costs an arm and a leg, but you get that meeting space, and you also get the marketing ability of CES to be able to put their name on the list so you can find you. It's pretty cool.
So sort of like a hybrid between the two models.
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, all these people are in the same hotel. ADATA, which I meet with ADATA at Computex every year. I have some good friends there. But they've typically never sold anything in the U.S., so they don't market in the U.S. Hence, they don't send out review samples.
Okay.
Well, they have hired a U.S.-based market person, so now they're going to start doing that. ADATA stuff is already in the retail channel, so it's just a matter of getting review samples out and stuff. So their flagship item that they were showing was a... See if I can get this right. It was a 4-in-1 system. It was a battery for your smartphone.
Okay.
It was a USB drive over USB 3. It was a wireless hotspot and media server.
All in one, huh?
All in one.
Interesting.
I think that's all of them. Yeah, it has a 5,000 milliamp hour battery in there, so it'll charge quite a few iPhones. But you can carry this around. It's a lot like the Y drive that we looked at from Kingston.
Right.
So you can put your movies on there and actually stream them out wirelessly to your mobile devices. And you can also hook it up to your internet connection and share a Wi-Fi connection with your other mobile devices through that one internet connection.
Well, that seems cool. And you only have to buy one device. That definitely has its advantages.
Yeah. There's several companies were doing devices similar to this. So it's not a new thing, but it's kind of neat to see the different implementations.
Well, and we're all trying to find ways to optimize what we're doing with our mobile devices since there's so much innovation there.
Yeah. They also had some high-end gaming memory. This is their first time offering 2600 megahertz memory. So the timings aren't great. I think it's like Cas 11, but the speed is there, and that's really what matters when it comes to Sandy and Ivy Bridge. So it's kind of nice to see that going. CyberPower PC was one of my last meetings. And as always, they've had some amazing displays, mostly in, you know, like $6,000 PCs with fully water-cooled multiple graphics cards.
I've been really impressed with CyberPower PC. I mean, they've kind of filled the niche that's been abandoned by, you know, Falcon. And
well, not because they wanted to. They got bought by somebody.
Mm-hmm. So they, you know, as far as boutique and high-end systems, there's not a lot of choices out there.
No, and the CyberPower PC model is probably, it's configured like if you or I were building a system for somebody.
Right.
And they call you up on the phone and wonder, oh, so where's my build? Well, with CyberPower, you can go to the website, type in your order number, and you can find out exactly where your system is.
Well, yeah, and their machines look great. I mean, yeah. They really take the time.
Yeah, they do a good job putting them together. And it's all based on your specs. You know, you can start with one that they've pre-built, and then you can modify it or you can spec it from scratch. So that's the nice thing about CyberPower and the fact that they are enthusiast level machines. You know, they have a home theater PC edition that's really designed as a mini gaming box. They have the full size multi height Viper towers, well, the Black Mamba as they call it. They're offering an all-in-one PC version similar to the Gigabyte Intel edition, but this is a slightly larger case that supports a discrete graphics card, so you can do high-end gaming on it.
That's nice, especially as we're seeing high-end gaming moving back towards the TV again, you know, in competition with your consoles. Steam's been driving that specifically this year, so it'll be interesting to see if we see growth in taking your PC back to the TV.
Yeah, and definitely look for more reviews from CyberPower on NinjaLink, because that's where it's going. In terms of official coverage, that was all I did for blog posting. About that point, I started getting burned out, and there was really one official day left, and I met with 5 vendors.
Oh, well, tell us what we missed, since there is no blog post.
So the first company, well, the first couple of companies that I'm going to talk about was Rosewill and Rocket. Rosewill, as you know, is one of Newegg's house brands.
Oh, that's right.
You can buy just about anything from Rosewill. You can buy like a bread maker, you can buy a blender, you can buy a security system, you can buy a chassis, you can buy platinum power supplies, you can buy just about anything from Rosewill.
And no, they started out kind of suspect, like they were one off, but you can get some pretty good deals.
Yeah, and I think the way that their model works is that they go around and just buy up designs. So they find somebody that's offering a bread maker, but they don't have manufacturer support, so they buy them, rebrand them, and then sell them. And everybody's happy.
Everybody's happy. It makes sense.
Yeah. Now, Rocket doesn't have a huge product line, at least in the U.S., but they have some amazing technology. And this is probably one of the best shows of technology that I got to see. The first was an upgrade to the Cone mouse.
Which is my favorite mouse.
Yeah, it turns out that some people were complaining about the scroll wheel breaking.
Oh, wow.
So they beefed it up and actually added a couple more axis moves to it. So the wheel is industrial strength. It's bulletproof at this point, as they call it. Mm-hmm. And they also upgraded the optics. So you get a higher resolution, stronger mouse all around, exactly the same form factor and exact same lighting, Rocket Talk, it's all there.
Wow, and you know, those are all big pluses for me. Yeah. That is, I think, nearly the perfect mouse. So the fact that they're improving on it, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
That's on my must-buy list for sure.
The next big win for them was a mechanical keyboard. So the keyboard you reviewed, the ISQ, is now in mechanical form. So it will have cherry red switches. I believe they have brown and black as well.
This is maybe a good opportunity to talk about trending a little bit on keyboards. It seems like everybody's moving back to mechanical gaming again.
It is. And I think part of that is because the key switches are just, they're stronger.
Mm-hmm.
They feel more quality. And everybody's making a gaming keyboard that's mechanical. So it's kind of like the Me Too sort of thing. It's like you do it or you're going to get a bad review saying, hey, this is not mechanical.
Well, and it's helping to bring the prices down, too. I remember when you couldn't get a good mechanical keyboard for less than about $2, and now they're all over the place for way less than that.
Right.
And full-featured.
And in terms of features, Rocket has added a bunch of lighting effects to it. Probably one of the coolest ones is a glow fade for every key press.
Oh, wow.
So when you when you're typing, it will actually highlight that key and then fade it out for just a couple of seconds after you press the key. So
just sounds awesome.
It's pretty darn cool. And then it will highlight like gaming keys, like the WASD and the arrow keys and stuff like that. And you can program those through their new software called the Power Grid.
Nice.
Now, one thing that I think we talked about previously about keyboards is that Logitech was one of the only ones that had that display on the keyboard.
Yeah, which I also like, and I tend to miss, actually. I haven't had one of those keyboards in my main system for a while.
Well, Rocket wanted to add a screen like that to their keyboard, thinking it would actually enhance the performance of the keyboard. And then they decided, well, maybe what we should do is hook it in with Rocket Talk, create a new set of software, and then wirelessly connect it to your mobile device.
So you could actually use your mobile device as a display?
Yeah.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, and it's fully configurable. So the power grids, the grids are like these little blocks of stuff that you can do. Say, for instance, you are playing a space shooter game and you want to see live stats on accuracy, how many shells you have left, how fast you're going, stuff like that.
Oh, I like that. That takes me back to the Logitech too.
Yeah. So you set up these grids and you configure it so when you're playing that game, that grid will show up on your mobile phone.
Cool.
And as you're playing the game, you can look over and see exactly what you want to see. You can set up another grid that might support temperature, fan speeds, stuff like that on your computer.
I like it.
So then you switch over to another screen and you can see all that stuff.
See, now that's the kind of innovation that I appreciate. I mean, nearly everyone has a smartphone, so why not utilize that screen? Keep your costs down and use that as an external display. That's very cool.
Here's the best part. That mobile app, it's free.
Nice.
And you don't actually have to have a Rocket product to use it.
Really?
Serious for trip? There's some aspects of it that only work with Rocket stuff.
Well, that makes sense.
But the Power Grid is something that you can download for free as an app. You run it on your PC, you run it on your mobile device, link them together. Instant, awesome gaming experience.
So we'll have to keep an eye out for that for you guys.
Definitely. The other meeting was with Cooler Master. I meet with Cooler Master every year. I want to say that that was the first company at any trade show that I had any interaction with, which was awesome. So I tend to go back to Cooler Master every year. They have a great display. You know, they have their mobile stuff. They have their Storm Gaming stuff. Probably the coolest thing I saw there, It was the aluminum chassis, the ATC, was coming back.
Oh, cool.
Some of you may think that Lan Li was the first aluminum case manufacturer.
Well, at least they've got that reputation.
They had that reputation, but Cooler Master was the first one to release a fully aluminum case. You know, you'd have to look back in the archives to find out exactly when that happened, but it did happen, and Cooler Master was one of the first. So.
Oh, yeah, and there's nothing like a good aluminum case. It's amazing to me how many people out there have never seen one or owned one of their own. You just don't know what you're missing.
The ATCs were always prized for being strong, because a lot of other aluminum cases at the time were made out of kind of like pot metal sort of aluminum that was really soft and pliable. Cooler Master always made sure that the panels were relatively thick and strong. They didn't rattle. The front panels are always extremely thick and strong and, you know, brushed.
Right.
They're still working out some of the design aspects of it, but they're going to offer two different colors, a, you know, plain silver color and then a black. And nice. I told them what they need to do is, for some of the fan grills, they need to anodize those like red or anodize them yellow and then make those as accessories that you could buy and customize the case. I think that'd be awesome.
That would be cool, actually.
The last two companies that I officially met with were Silverstone and EVGA. And Silverstone has always had kind of a great display. You know, I mentioned this for everybody, that they had a great display. So with Silverstone, they had a lot of the chassis that were on display at Computex in beta format, or alpha in some cases, and now we have the final version. So we have the Raven 4 and the Fortress 4, which are adopting not the inverted motherboard layout, or the upside-down motherboard layout. Yeah, the one where the cables came out the top of the case.
Oh, yeah, we liked that. It's unique, if nothing else.
It was unique. A lot of people didn't like it because the cables, it just didn't feel natural. So the natural way is to reverse the motherboard so that the video cards are on top and processors at the bottom.
Okay.
Now, that puts the cables out the back of the PC, but also gives you a natural cooling of all of the internal components.
That's true.
It also allows the chassis to be a lot skinnier. Not necessarily in width, but in depth. So the Raven 4 and the Fortress 4 both follow the same format. It should sell pretty well, I think. And they both come with dual 180mm fans up front.
Nice.
One of the surprise products that they had was called the Mammoth.
Mammoth?
And it was basically a Fortress 4 PC, but instead of just having a dust filter, it had an industrial-grade HEPA filter.
Oh.
So HEPA filter in front of the 180mm fans. In the back, it had fully louvered venting with the louvers pointing down, with the idea that the ancient Mammoth was very adaptable and could exist in harsh conditions. Well, so can this case.
So with a name like Mammoth, is it big?
It's big by design, but not necessarily like the Cosmos 2.
Oh, okay.
It's a pretty big chassis, but just because of all the stuff around it.
So lots to look forward to from Silverstone. How about EVGA?
EVGA, we are going to have an exclusive with EVGA on the next podcast, but at CES, they were showing their power supplies. They were also showing the EVGA Mini Box, which is a mini ITX gaming PC. One water-cooled edition, the other will be air-cooled. And they actually look really cool. They're kind of like a toaster with fans.
Nice.
Pretty cool.
But gaming capable.
Yeah, gaming capable. So you'll be able to put a full mini ITX core system in there and a full-length video card.
Very nice.
They also had a refresh to the X79 board called the X79 Dark.
Nice.
And the special thing about this board is that they threw away all the previous designs, and they came back with a revised PCI Express layout, a revised PWM, more SATA ports, better benchtop controls, and, dun-dun-dun, 8 memory slots.
Very cool. And there are pictures of this on the website if you haven't had a chance to follow along so far. This is a good opportunity, because this board is sexy.
And we hope to get a review of that soon, and also the exclusive interview with EVGA.
So something else to look forward to. Well, it sounds like it's been a very productive trip. But having talked about all these vendors individually, any final thoughts or trends? Anything we should look forward to in the future?
I'm going to say you need to look for Haswell, and that's going to be out probably second quarter. And that's really where a lot of the excitement's going to be. And we're going to have a whole new set of boards coming out for that, and also a whole new set of video cards.
Well, Haswell, definitely looming in the future, and it sounds like the mobile space is where all the innovation is for today, at least. So anyway, that's been our CES debrief. I hope you enjoyed it.
For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes. If you have any questions, drop by the forums or email us at podcast@ninjalane.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Ninja Lane by subscribing to our RSS, now available on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter or join us on Facebook. This has been a Ninja Lane production, copyright 2013. Thanks for listening.
Phone call from the president.
Yeah, something like that.